Hello, and welcome to Harp Column Podcast, taking you behind the stories in Harp Column from a practical harpist's perspective. My name is Christina Finch, and I will be your guide to all things harp. Today's episode is brought to you by Harp Column Music at harpcolummusic.com, where you can download PDFs of some of the best new arrangements and compositions for solo, ensemble, and chamber harp. Heading to the American Harp Society Conference in Atlanta this summer and planning to play in the Adult Harp Ensemble? Head over to harpcolummusic.com to download PDFs of three of the pieces to be performed. Allegro, from Bach's Brandenburg Concerto, arranged for four harps by Lynn Williams, and two arrangements for two harps by John Wickey, The Water is Wide and He's Gone Away. Episode 8 will feature harpist and composer Rhett Barnwell, author of Harp Therapy Explained in the current issue of Harp Column, as well as a story told by special guest and therapeutic harpist Angie Beamish. Before we get started, I'll have Rhett introduce himself.
My name is Rhett Barnwell, and I live in Atlanta, Georgia. I kind of wear several hats. My day job is a director of music at an Episcopal church. I compose and publish music. I teach, of course, and do some freelance work. That's kind of what I do, at least this year, to earn a living. And, you know, who knows? I'm always kind of reinventing myself. So who knows what will happen next year?
What inspired you to write the article that you wrote for Harp Column in this last issue?
When Allison contacted me about doing the article, I assumed that she wanted someone who was still in the harp therapy world and practicing as a harp practitioner, which I currently am not, although I have in the past done that. And so I wrote her back and I said, no, you know, I'm not really active in the field, so you might want to find someone else. But she said, we really would like someone who's not in the field to give sort of a different perspective and not be biased towards one program or the other. And I think sometimes I'd really like to go back and become certified. There's so many wonderful programs. And, you know, you can do them online now. I mean, it used to be you'd have to, you know, give up 2 years of your life for some of them, or, you know, travel and do these modules on the weekends. I'm just thrilled that there are all these programs there now. And so when Allison asked me to write the article, I just thought, this is great, because I can really look and see what's out there now and educate or let people know what's going on with it.
Yeah, it's really interesting to read about all these programs that are out there. I really had no idea.
Well, and it's changed a lot. I think there's some basic underwriting principles that, you know, even if you're not into music therapy or therapeutic music, you know, we can all agree on that music, good music generally makes people feel good. I mean, it helps, you know, even in the most generic sense. And some of the programs will get very quantitative about if you play a certain type of music in a certain mode, it will do certain things in the body, which is certainly valid. And other programs or other practitioners will simply play music that they feel inherently will help the particular situation at hand. There are just so many different kinds and angles to therapeutic music.
Did you know all the people that you interviewed?
No, I didn't. And it took me actually a little bit of time to find the right people. My first inclination, I thought, I know all these people in the music therapy world and the harp world. And then I thought, well, most of the ones I know are certified in one program, Music for Healing and Transition. Allison and I talked about, you know, three, four, maybe five different programs represented. And some of them are newer. And I thought, I don't know anybody who does these other programs. But I knew Angie Beamish and I are very good friends. And I know Lawrence Furr from meeting at some conferences. Edie and Melody, I knew of. I had never met them. But it was kind of funny because I thought, oh, piece of cake, and then everybody I knew was in one program. So that didn't really help a lot.
What brought you to therapeutic music?
Back in the 1990s, early 90s, there was sort of this movement that started with, you know, some harpists who were drawn to the use of the harp in healing modalities, as they say in the profession. And there wasn't, you know, much training back then. And this was, you know, kind of before the internet. And I was really kind of a beginning harpist. And a friend of mine who was a nurse at a hospice in Atlanta said, well, why don't you just come down one Friday evening and play for the patients? Because they're kind of stuck here with nothing else to do. And people don't come visit them very much. It was a small hospice, about 10 men there. So I was doing that for a while. And then I heard about the Music for Healing and Transition program. And they were having a training course here in Atlanta. So I decided to sign up for it. So I did a couple of modules of that and became really fascinated with this thing. And then I started playing at nursing homes. And a lot of it was just kind of learning by the seat of my pants, you know, finding what works, what doesn't. that's how my interests got started. And then I moved to Charleston, South Carolina for a while. And then I kind of got away from it. I ended up going into church music full time. I was heavily involved with that, but I used it as an opportunity to play the harp quite a bit in church. But I really kind of got away from the regular basis of the therapy programs. But a lot of my friends are in therapy work, and I'm very honored, I must say, and very, very privileged that I know a lot of people who are using my arrangements and compositions in therapeutic work. And that is one of the most fulfilling things to me ever.
Is there a way to do this and make a living, or is it mostly volunteer work?
Yes and no. Most hospitals that sponsor these programs and care facilities, most of them do actually pay people to come in. Not all, but most. You pretty much need to be certified to be at that level. I don't know if you can actually earn a living without having another job. The main issue is, well, I'll just use an example. Back in the 90s, I was playing for a nursing home, and they actually contracted me to come and play two different facilities for, I think it was a total of 4 hours a day. And they paid, I believe it was $50 an hour, which isn't bad. But, you know, it's kind of hard to play for 4 hours a day. I don't know about the other harpists listening to this, but it's very taxing physically and mentally. Keep going, and then a lot of it is repeating the same music for different patients. So I found it a bit taxing, and if you think about it, if you were trying to play for 8 hours a day, it would just be really difficult to do it. It might not be possible to earn a complete living doing it, but you can certainly earn, I would say, you know, it could be a good part-time job. Now, some people do it as a volunteer. I've done mostly volunteer work, and I kind of prefer that. I don't know, there's a little bit less pressure, and I feel like I'm really just giving something. But that being said, a lot of people I know who are certified and get paid, I mean, the money is just icing on the cake. They certainly are giving of themselves. And as Angie Bemis, I think she wouldn't mind me quoting on this, she always says it's a labor of love. She said, we're not in this for the money. And I think that's certainly true.
Speaking of Angie Bemis, let's hear a personal account of the labor of love from the woman herself.
Hi, Christina. You've asked me to share a most memorable harp therapy experience. I've kept a log since 1998, and I have over 200 pages of handwritten notes. I jot down notes about each visit, and each quarter I send a copy of it to my supervisor, and she reads excerpts at the auxiliary board meetings. I put an asterisk by the most special stories, and there's probably at least one asterisk on each page because so many wonderful things happen. I'm always amazed by my right time, right place experiences, especially since I'm fortunate enough to get to play when and where I feel led, virtually all over the hospital. So, one of my favorite stories actually started about 13 years ago without my even knowing how special it would turn out to be. Here's what happened. Several months ago, I played the harp at a friend's church that's about 2 hours north of Atlanta. As my husband was loading my harp after the service, a woman and a teenage girl approached him. The mother said, "Your wife's harp music was beautiful. It reminded me of the music that a harpist played when my daughter was in the NICU at a hospital in Atlanta." As you can see, my little 2-pound baby has grown up into a healthy young woman. I sometimes think about that beautiful music and how it brought peace when I was a new mother who was so afraid of losing my little baby. My husband asked, "Which hospital in Atlanta?" "Oh, Northside Hospital." Through tears, my husband said, "That had to be Angie who played for you and your daughter. She has played at Northside for 15 years, and she loves to play in the NICU, especially since her younger sister had a 2-pound baby boy who was in the NICU for several months. You just have to go back into the church and tell her your story. She would love to meet you and your daughter." So, you see, 13 years later, I got to meet one of the babies I had played for. In the NICU, over the years, I have observed that some of the babies seem to reach for the music with their tiny arms and fingers. On the monitors, the nurses observe that some of the babies' heartbeats become more regular or that their oxygen levels improve. Also, mothers who are struggling to learn to nurse their new babies have mentioned that they seem to relax with the music. What we know, of course, is that the mothers relax, helping the babies to relax too. Playing the harp at the hospital is a quiet activity, and it provides a therapeutic benefit that sometimes seems unremarkable at the time. But it does work, and it is powerful. I think I mentioned this in Rhett's article, but my favorite comment is when someone says that they felt the music before they realized they were hearing it.
That's it for our 8th episode. A huge thank you to Rhett Barnwell and Angie Beamish for sharing with us today. If you'd like to learn more about Rhett and his more than 40 arrangements and compositions, visit his website at seraphimmusic.com. That's SERAPHIM music.com. Music for today's episode is from Annalene Linnart's new harp concerto CD, reviewed by Allison Young, and given a 10 out of 10 in the current issue of Harp Column. To learn more about Harp Column, please visit www.harpcolumn.com and subscribe to gain access to current and past issues, as well as a lot of great web content. Thanks again for joining us. My name is Christina Finch, and we at Harp Column hope you have a spectacular week. ¶¶